leading the cloud revolution.
This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dortch.
Recently, the FBI arrested several people, 10 or 11 different people, alleged to be carrying out long-term spying for the Russian government. And this brought back into the idea of what's going on. Are there still countries who are conducting espionage in the United States? And with that, there's a field called counterintelligence that deals with trying to find out who these spies are and trying to, you know, bring them out, arrest them, and prevent these spying activities from going on in the United States. I have with me a retired CIA officer and retired Air Force officer, Brian Kelly. He's an adjunct professor at the Institute of World Politics. He's an adjunct professor at the school, the Bush School of Government at Texas A&M. And like I mentioned, he's a retired CIA officer and also a retired Air Force officer and spent 40 years in the business of counterintelligence. Brian, thank you for joining me.
My pleasure, Derek. Thank you.
You know what? A lot of people, you know, this brought back counterintelligence, and we've always had spying in the United States from different foreign governments, but we don't hear about it a lot these days. This incident just recently kind of brought this back to the forefront. What's going on? What is espionage? What is counterintelligence? I mean, what is this field about?
Well, counterintelligence is often called the most misunderstood of all the intelligence-related type of activities. It's something you don't normally hear about until we have a rash of arrests or a major arrest takes place. So most people don't know much about it. I had one of my classes, I quote a writer by the name of Thomas Powers, who defines counterintelligence one way. He said, counterintelligence is to intelligence as epistemology is to philosophy. And that's a big gulp. And what he means is this is a very, very complex, we study how things happen. It gets way down into what we call the way down to the weeds on things. We look at things that most people overlook or don't consider very important. Just as another sidebar of this story, counterintelligence is something that we've often over the years had very, very difficult time to define. There was an executive order that came out many decades ago, which put the basic spin on counterintelligence. And I quote it from here. It says, the information gathered and activities conducted to protect against espionage, other intelligence activities, sabotage or assassinations conducted by or on behalf of foreign governments or elements thereof, foreign organizations or foreign persons or international terrorist activities. And you get that whole mouthful and you say, what does that really mean? And basically, counterintelligence, when you look at that, is that counterintelligence tries to protect your secrets while stealing the other side's. So what we have a defensive mission and an offensive mission. The defensive mission is to protect our people, protect our secrets, at the same time trying to work to steal the secrets of the adversary. There's lots of different ways of cutting this. When I was at the National Counterintelligence Executive, I was with a group that brought people from counterintelligence elements from all over the government. That's the Central Intelligence Agency, Federal Bureau of Investigation, NSA, the Department of Defense, et cetera. And we spent months haggling over, can we define counterintelligence a little bit better? And each word was looked at. Each element of the United States government which practices counterintelligence, and these are certainly the main areas, look at CI from their own perspective, from their own culture, from their own mission, and they put different emphasis on counterintelligence. So the FBI, as you noted at the opening of the segment, right now they have arrested at least 10. There's 11th that is right now skipped bail. These are deep cover officers. Their job, the FBI's job, of course, is to find these people that they're embedded inside the United States, who are doing all kinds of operational activities. So they're looking at the defensive side of counterintelligence. The military, by and large, is looking at the counterintelligence from a little bit different optic. They have to protect their soldiers. They have to do what they call force protection. They also, because they have operational plans, the military tries to, again, keep its operational plans secret. And some of the ways means they do that is by use of double agents, which are people that one side believe they've recruited but are actually working for the adversary.
Sure.
So in this case, the military is a very strong proponent of double agents, and that's more on the offensive side of the business. CIA is looking at its assets, it's the people that we've recruited to make sure that they are not double agents. In fact, right. They are providing intelligence, which CIA then provides to elements of the government. So to some degree, we look at vetting our assets, in other words, investigating our assets to ensure that they are telling us the truth.
And it's a dangerous business.
Because it is a very dangerous business, as we've seen in the tragedy that happened to several CIA officers in Coast.
That's right.
So we have to be very, very sure of things. So there's a mix of offensive and defensive double agents. There's deception involved. There's validation involved. There's counter-espionage involved. And then one of the elements that we also look at is the deep cover spy, the illegal.
Okay.
So it's a very complex area. It's an area where most of us are trained as intelligence officers, but over and above that, now we're trained in a subspecialty called counterintelligence.
Is this a field that has, you know, and you kind of mentioned about defining it, and it sounds as if maybe within the past 20 years or so, this field, and you can tell me if I'm correct or not, maybe past 20, 30 years, this field has kind of really taken its own life of its own.
Yeah, you're talking about an evolutionary process. Absolutely.
It
sounds exactly
that.
What it is. And it's done in large part because of easier ways of communicating. The technology has changed. The essence of spying goes back to early biblical times, and that's always been with us. Once the spy acquires the information that wants to pass to the other side, how do they do it? How do they communicate? And that's usually the weak link. So we go after and try and find out who is it, how are they doing it. And the other side is trying not to get caught, so they're understanding the methodologies of the counter-espionage organization that is trying to catch them.
Right. With all of that, you know, I mean, what's the state, you know, and you teach this and you have been in the business for about 40 years. Mm-hmm. What's the state of espionage in the United States right now? I mean, who are some of the players that we are constantly being concerned about?
Well, we have the traditional adversaries. When the Russian Revolution in August of 1991, for example, a lot of people in the government felt that the former Soviet Union, now Russia, was going to not spy against the United States anymore. Well, I think events of the recent past week or so has shown that that's probably not true. Spying will go on both sides. We spy, they spy. Who you spy against? The Israeli government, for example, was running a U.S. citizen called Jonathan Pollard. So you have even your adversaries, you've got even your alleged allies. Opportunity comes in, and the chance that you take politically that you can perhaps recruit someone, run that person, steal the secrets, has to be weighed against some of your foreign policy and other issues that you're going to have. So if you get your spies get caught, what's the outcome? And that's, will it meet that test with? If we get somebody, one of our people caught and in jail, as the Russians have right now, you have to look and say, you know, what options do they have?
Sure.
So we have in this country, and the FBI, it's their job, it's their primary job is to, in the counterintelligence area, certainly is to stop people who are spying, to catch those who are spying, and to try and confuse and thwart the enemies of our country that are here under diplomatic cover, or in this case here, they have blended into our society looking like you and me throughout. So it's a very, very difficult job for the FBI.
When we're talking about embedding, we're talking about people who may have been in our society for, what, 20, 30 years?
Well, at least 10, 15 years, and maybe as many as 20 years, according to this, if you count the time that some of these people were sent out by Russia, obviously. And how do they get into the United States? What do they do when they get here? What is their mission? And you look at it in perspective and saying, why are they here? They're trained. These are highly trained people. What's their mission in the United States? And that is, of course, what the FBI's job is to find them. And this is like finding a needle in a haystack.
Right. Well, I was just going to say,
very, very difficult.
If you have somebody who's living just a regular life, it seems as if, you know, these people or even other spy cases, you've had situations where people were, you know, they were just seemed to be a regular job and a regular house, anything like that.
That's where the neighbors were shocked when you see all these television outtakes.
Exactly.
That, oh, my God, these are nice people. They're taking their children.
Never
to school, they would never have known. And they continue to do. And as these weeks unfold and deals are cut, I think we're going to find a lot more information if some of these people decide to plead out and to cooperate with the authorities. We'll get a lot better sense of what their actual mission is in this country. And it is a game changer. It is a major game changer in this country that we have now seen the extent to which an adversary will be coming into this country and embedding some of its intelligence officers in different ways, not out of the embassy, not through other means they've normally had in the past. So what I term this as a real major game changer. It's a significant event and for the FBI and great kudos to them because, as the affidavit states, they were looking at these series of cases for the better part of a decade.
We're talking to Brian Kelly. He's a retired CIA officer, retired Air Force officer. He's also an adjunct professor at the Institute of World Politics that's here in Washington, D.C., and also an adjunct professor at the Bush School of Government at Texas A&M. He spent 40 years in the business of counterintelligence and teaches it right now at these two institutes. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Debt stinks. No one wants to have it, and no one wants to battle it. Having too much debt is an embarrassing situation that can dramatically impact the quality of your life, including your ability to get a loan or a job. At the Great Credit for Life Center, we've met too many good people who have too much bad debt. That's why we've shown over 2 million people how to eliminate their credit card debts, car payments, student loans, even their mortgage. Our debt-free Bible will show you some of the most successful debt-eliminating secrets in the world. You can get out of debt no matter how much money you owe or how much money you make. The truth is, the Debt-Free Bible contains secrets to helping you live debt-free. That's why everyone needs it. To find out how to get a free copy of the Debt-Free Bible, call now while a limited number of free copies are still available. Call 1-800-400-9257. For your Debt-Free Bible, call 1-800-400-9257. 1-800-400-9257.
Meeting mission goals through technology. Brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Federal Aviation Administration's announced $125 million in contracts to develop and demonstrate technologies that will reduce commercial jet fuel consumption, emissions, and noise. The contracts are part of the FAA's Continuous Lower Energy Emissions and Noise, or CLEAN, program to speed up the introduction of green technology into aviation. The FAA is contracting with five companies, including Boeing, General Electric, and Rolls-Royce, to research and demonstrate a variety of technologies, including sustainable alternative aviation fuels and lighter and more efficient gas turbine engine components. Among the goals are a reduction in fuel burn by 33%, a 60% reduction in nitrogen oxide emissions, and a 32 decibel reduction in cumulative aircraft noise levels.
General Dynamics Information Technology, delivering the strength of technology to achieve mission success. General Dynamics IT. Visit GDIT.com to learn more.
Here's Brian Ichikawa, Vice President of the Identity Solutions Practice, Unisys Federal Systems, on the Identity Technology and Citizen Privacy Panel, sponsored by Unisys.
One of the big things that we'll see is the U.S. federal government really is, I think, paving the way for not only identification, but also e-authentication. As more and more services are offered on the Internet to citizens, the need to be able to more strongly authenticate them is going to become more and more important as well.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Unisys, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Unisys Identity Solutions provides citizens, employees, and travelers with the means to identify themselves assuredly, conveniently, and effectively in both physical and IT environments. The goal in every identification and credentialing engagement is to provide the highest level of identity assurance in the most convenient and effective manner. Unisys end-to-end solutions incorporate all aspects of identification and credentialing. Learn more about Unisys security offerings. Visit unisys.com.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I have with me Brian Kelly. He's a retired CIA officer, retired from the military, from the Air Force. He spent 40 years in counterintelligence, and now he's an adjunct professor at the Institute of World Politics, a school that teaches about intelligence and diplomacy and statecraft. And also, he's an adjunct professor at the Bush School of Government at Texas A&M. Brian, we were talking kind of over the break, and we were talking about before about kind of, you know, what counterintelligence is. But we mentioned before we kind of left off about Robert Hansen, one of the probably, you know, I remember when it broke out, probably one of the most devastating cases, the FBI agent who was spying with the Russians.
Correct.
For
yeah.
a long period of
well,
time.
Well, he was on and off for 21 years. It's
21
a very unique spy case that he had three distinct periods of espionage, starting in late 1979 and culminating in his arrest on the 18th of February 2001. He had two breaks in between. He stopped spying in 1981. He started up again in October 1985, stopped in December 91, and commenced again in the spring of 1999 until he was arrested at Foxstone Park in Vienna, Virginia, somewhere around 4:45 in the afternoon on a Sunday afternoon on the 18th of February.
Wow. You have some real close ties to this case.
There were ties I wish I didn't have, actually.
Tell us about it, because, I mean, at one point in time, because of your relationship and because of how what you were doing within the CIA, mm-hmm. you were being looked at as a possible
right.
spy. What was going on?
Well, this triggers up to what we call the Year of the Spy in 1985. That year, you argue these numbers, but most of us stick with the term, the number of 13 Americans were arrested for being spies. There were some pretty notorious spies, the John Walker spy ring, the Navy warrant officer, his brother, his son, and his best friend, Jerry Whitworth. Jay Pollard, who I mentioned earlier, was spying for the Israelis. Larry Wu Tai Chin, who was working at the, basically was now the Open Source Center at CIA. Sharon Scranich, a CIA, basically an administrator, secretary administrator. An NSA employee by a former NSA employee by the name of Ron Pelton, which is some of the people who were arrested in 1985. We focus on that, and I teach it in my classes. It's a remarkable year because we've never had that before or since that many sure. Americans arrested for spying. What we didn't know at the time, first of all, there were several other major spies that were also spying at that time frame. There was a major spy ring in the U.S. military and the Army in Germany under the direction of Clyde Lee Conrad, who had a number of his confederates who were also spying. There were Anna Montes, who was a senior DIA, Defense Intelligence Agency analyst, spying for the Cubans. There were other people that were spying we didn't know about. And you're trying to take that under. Then the third thing was 1985 was the year that both Aldrich Rick Ames at CIA, an operations officer, and Bob Hansen, an FBI special agent, both started to spy independent in parallel with each other for the KGB in Washington, D.C. Both of them.
And these guys knew nothing about each other.
No, they did not. And they may have known of each other through the fact that both at that time were in counterintelligence, but there's no indications whatsoever that they knew of each other. They were very compartmented, it's a word we use to keep things separated by the Russians, the KGB at the time, kept them totally separate, and then were reaping arguably the most important haul of secrets ever in the history of mankind. Ames was cleaning out CIA. Hansen was cleaning out FBI. Now, both the FBI and the CIA lost virtually all of their operations against the main adversary at the time, the Soviet Union. We lost human operations. Those are the ones that we talk about when we have recruitments from the other side. Technical operations, and a lot of investigations went south on us. And nobody could quite figure out what the problem was. Why are we losing this? And what I teach in my classes now, and we use an awful lot of government documents, is to what happened and what the lessons learned from that period of time were. In essence, both sides were somewhat blind to the fact that one of our own could be a spy.
Okay. We never thought. It was kind of one of those situations that we don't think that somebody at this level
absolutely
would be spying on
us. It's called a blind spot, and both CIA and FBI had it. And so
we don't assume that now, but I mean at that
time. We better not assume that now because sure. those are the lessons learned sure. From that, because no matter how well you think you're protected, no matter how many investigations and things that we do to ensure that our people are being honest, that doesn't mean that we can't be penetrated. And so there's the lessons learned. We teach it. What mistakes do we make? What do we do right? And that's the sort of thing that that I teach in my classes. Let's look back using a lot of government studies, inspector general's reports, affidavits, bills of complaint, all kinds of things that came out looking at both those cases. And I have my students going in there and seeing what it is from the upper levels, the people looking down outside of our business primarily will say, this is where you guys made mistakes and you need to fix it. Or these are some of the things that were done well and continue to do that.
You knew both of these gentlemen, Ames and Hansen.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. I worked with both of them. Rick was in the counterintelligence. He was head of the counterintelligence side of the Soviet division at that time. He actually left that position in late 1985, and he went into Italian language training. Bob, I met, I can't remember whether it would have been late 82 or early 83 for the first time, and I met him when I was at a meeting at FBI, and we were standing next to each other, what we call backbenching, in a meeting between some of our senior officers. So that's when I met Bob for the first time.
Was there any kind of personality trait? Was there any kind of situation or something like that that kind of, you know, triggered it off that, you know, what these guys may not be, you know, doing the right thing within the agencies?
I get that question a lot, and people expect an answer. The answer was, of course I saw. I'm very smart.
Right,
I could see it. And the real answer is,
I saw something in their eyes.
Yes, yeah. I saw something in their eyes. I looked into their soul, and I could see
exactly.
It. The answer is no.
Right.
Both of them have very quirky personalities. One of the lectures I do for my classes, I compare and contrast Ames and Hansen, and I have somewhere around 30 points of things that they were very, very similar on.
Okay.
Their personalities, both of them extremely cerebral. Two very, very smart people. Both of them were arrogant. Both of them tend to be loners. Both of them were extremely lazy. Now, you look at some of the negative things that both of them had.
And those are like contradictions, you know.
Yeah, they are.
Extremely smart,
yeah,
but lazy.
And lazy.
You know?
Yeah, and both of them, and the other thing about this, Derek, was that both of them were ill-suited. When we talk about federal jobs and getting into places, they're ill-suited in the things that they were trained to do. Rick Ames was trained to be an operations officer, which means you go out on the street and your job is to recruit somebody.
Sure.
and to handle them. You have to have real, real good social skills to do that. Rick failed at it, and is a study I'm doing currently now for another talk I'm giving. Ames had poor social skills, and his first tour when he was in Ankara, his boss had written back and said, this person is ill-suited for this work. Go find something else. Ironically, and he's put this in his memoirs, he needs to go back and do something different like counterintelligence.
Okay.
So I don't know if that was a good or bad.
Right, right.
But Rick did have the skill sets for counterintelligence. In other words, he was a very good analyst. He could put together pieces of a puzzle, very smart, of course, and he understood. He had a great understanding of the Soviet target. So as an operations officer, he was much better suited to be an analyst.
Sure.
Bob Hansen was trained to be a special agent. Again, an investigator. You need to have force of personality to do that. There are certain types of people that do very well. Hansen, again, very poor social skills, extraordinarily poor social skills. He was a loner, but he also, his IQ was very high. He was also excellent as an analyst. And when he had a tour and it did the most damage, actually, when he was in the Soviet analytic unit at the FBI headquarters in the mid-1980s, when he really started his second period of espionage, did his great damage. But Bob had, again, an understanding, like Rick did, of the Soviet target. And both of them used their positions in counterintelligence to acquire the information that they subsequently sold for significant sums of money to our main adversary at the time, the KGB.
You know, as we look at these cases now and kind of even look back on it, how did they figure out, because, you know, some eyes had turned on you.
Yes.
How did they figure out that you weren't the person? And then how did they figure out, you know, I mean, did they see them doing something? Did somebody tip them off? Did a double agent tip them off? How did these guys get caught?
Well, in the Ames case, there was a renewal of the two by certain people at CIA in 1989, roughly. When they took a second look at the losses, again, if you have a blind spot, you're not looking to see if you've been penetrated. You're looking at other possible explanations, and they looked very hard at other things. There was also a significant deception by the KGB going on, which kept pushing us away from the possibility that CIA was penetrated. And so in the Ames case, they took a fresh set of eyes in 1989 and gradually winnowed a number of names down. Ames made several mistakes, one of which was to spend his money very wantonly. He was poor going overseas. He came back with very expensive suits. He had his teeth capped. He was driving a Jaguar. And then they made the worst sin of all. In the late 1980s, he bought a house in Arlington at the time way beyond what most of us could afford as a GS-14 for $540,000, which he paid cash for.
Oh, wow. Okay. We're talking to Brian Kelly. He's a retired CIA officer, retired Air Force officer who dealt with counterintelligence for over 40 years. He's also an adjunct professor at the Institute of World Politics. That's a place that's teaching counterintelligence, and also the Bush School of Government at Texas A&M. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Video teleconferencing solutions are changing the way people communicate by breaking down walls and enabling face-to-face communication regardless of distance or environment. Tanberg, now a part of Cisco, developed Break Down the Walls to provide a window into the ways government, education, and healthcare organizations are using VTC solutions to help them operate more effectively and efficiently, and the ways video solutions can be used to address challenges facing public sector organizations today. Learn more at breakdownthewalls.com.
Without an effective estate plan, your hard-earned wealth will end up in the hands of the government, and a will is no protection. At Zell Law, our estate planning lawyers take the time to listen and understand you and your goals and figure out what you want to achieve. Then we work with you to create a customized estate plan that helps you and your family realize your dreams of wealth and freedom. Find out how we do this by joining me, Wayne Zell, Saturdays at 10 a.m. for Blueprint for Wealth on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio.
Well, you know, Facebook has been having somewhat of a problem because they're just sharing your data with everybody. Mm-hmm. Deactivation is not the same as deletion.
The information is still out there.
And what they try to do is they try to urge you to deactivate, and they try to keep you away from that nasty deletion page. You see, deactivation simply turns off your account, but does not remove the data. The idea behind deactivation is that someday you'll be back.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Here's Dr. Doug Fridsma, Acting Director of Interoperability and Standards, HHS, on the Federal Executive Forum on Health IT, sponsored by McAfee.
Up until about 6 months ago, I was a practicing physician. I would like to see a world in which when a provider goes in to see a patient and they have to choose between their stethoscope and their health information technology, that they see it as the critical piece of taking good care of patients.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Federal IT organizations and prime contractors are experiencing a rapid rise in cybersecurity threats and compliance requirements. McAfee is the standard throughout federal, military, intelligence, and civilian enterprises worldwide. McAfee's capabilities are essential to keeping federal agencies ahead of the latest cyber threats. To learn more about how McAfee can help your organization combat cybersecurity threats, please call 1-888-VIRUS-NO or go to McAfee.com/government.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I have with me in the studio Brian Kelly. He's a retired CIA officer, and he also retired from the Air Force, and he spent over 40 years in the field of counterintelligence. He's also an adjunct professor at the Institute of World Politics and at the Bush School of Government at Texas A&M. Brian, you were working at CIA doing counterintelligence. You were dealing with this Felix Bloch case at State Department, where you were kind of looking at the case. Mm-hmm. And you're the one who was, you know, kind of putting eyes on Felix because he was being looked at as a possible spy.
Correct.
This kind of put the eyes on you because during that time period, Felix was also, since he was dealing with the immigrant and everything else, break that down for us and then more the details.
Yeah, the Felix Bloch case, one of the Cold War's remaining mysteries. Bloch was a senior State Department official. He had been the acting ambassador in Vienna. Believed to be doing some things who were suspicious. He came under CIA's and other microscopes at the time, and we worked very closely with the FBI on this one. In the affidavit, in the Hansen affidavit, Bloch was discussed as being involved with a deep cover Soviet illegal. These are just the same category we're talking about today in the arrests. Who handled Bloch, and his alias or his legend identity was that of Reino Gickman. Gickman was, as we found out, a Finnish national who died or actually disappeared right after World War II. Somebody using that identity came out to the West posing as a Finnish lumber salesman and was a very close associate of Felix Bloch, was seen meeting with Bloch, and Bloch admitted he had met with this guy. There were some bags passed in some foreign capitals. Bloch said that those bags were filled with postage stamps. Other people said that it might have been something else. Bloch was under, obviously, FBI investigation. In June of 1989, he got a phone call at his home not too far from the studios of WTOP, and was told that a contagious disease is going around. We're very concerned about you. You need to take care of yourself. That triggered an FBI interviews of Bloch, and Bloch then went and got a lawyer. 6 months later, he was dismissed by the State Department under national security grounds.
Okay.
The question is, how did the Russians know, or how did the Soviets at the time know, that Felix Bloch was under scrutiny by the United States government for possible criminal activities? And that was something that
but there was never enough to convict him, no.
That he was never taken to court, but the other point of the matter is that there is no statute of limitations on espionage.
Okay.
So technically that case is still open from the FBI. So what you have is something that gnaws at you, that we lost this case. If Bloch had been arrested, if Bloch was guilty, as some people felt, he would have been the most senior U.S. government official ever been arrested for espionage.
Yeah.
So the FBI, again, losing that case, those of us who spent a lot of time, there was other elements of this case, obviously, spent a lot of time into it trying to figure out what happened and who was doing what. At some point, the FBI became aware that case was compromised by a mole who was active after the arrest of Ames in 1994. For all kinds of reasons, way too numerous to get onto in this show, the spotlight fell on me.
Okay.
So for a period of more than 3 years.
And because
years,
you were working intimately with these issues.
Well, I knew the issues. I knew the case. It was obviously my case, and I knew it. And your worst nightmare in this business, and you give up so much. You give up the fact you're investigated every 5 years.
Sure.
I give up anybody at CIA has a polygraph every 5 years. We do financial disclosure statements. We give up a lot.
And a time and energy. I mean, just.
Yeah, and a point, there's a great scene in the movie Breach, a movie that I really liked a lot, and it's about Hansen.
Right,
and the main character, one of the main characters, is an FBI agent who is telling the young hero of the story, Eric O'Neill. Hansen was the guy that was the spy, and she said, "Everything that I've done since I've been here inside the FBI, everything we've all done, it's gone.
Right.
We've lost it all."
Right,
and her point is, she's looking back. She said, "We wasted our time. Everything we've done, we might as well just stayed home." It was a great scene from Breach. The director, Billy Ray, had written that scene. In fact, I just showed it this morning to a group of young military professionals that I'm teaching. And I said, look at the way the emotional piece of that. Think of it. You have given up so much. You have gone to places. You've been away from your family during celebrations, during major holidays. Why? Because it's mission required. And if you don't believe in the mission, you wouldn't be doing it. If you're a former Marine, Derek, you understand fully how much
that
you've given up for your country and to do what you believe and you still believe is the
right thing.
It doesn't really matter whether you're military or wherever you are. There are people who give up a lot. In this case, everything was gone. And the scene in Breach was, it was Hansen. The person that you're sitting next to has given it up. Well, the clue in this case was, if you find the person who compromised Felix Bloch, then you find the mole. And unfortunately, for 3+ years, I was the center of the investigation. I was suspended from CIA for 18 months.
That had to be one of the most horrible times of your life.
Well, it is. You wait every day to be arrested, and you wait every day to be arrested for treason. And all of us, every one of my colleagues that I work with, FBI, CIA, Department of Defense, NSA, all of them, they truly believe in our country. They truly believe what they're doing is right. And they put their heart and soul into everything. And they give up so much.
And nobody
ever hears about these people, but they do their job day to day.
Sure.
And they work at it. And then the worst nightmare we all have is that the system turns on you and points a finger. You're the traitor.
How did that make you feel? I mean,
that was awful. There was a scene, again, I come back to the movie Breach, where Hansen's being taken to jail. And again, Billy Ray, the writer, director, put it in. And he's got Hansen in the back seat of an FBI vehicle on his way to be processed, and of course he's been arrested. And he said, think about it. Think of what it's like when they're hunting for a mole, and you're in a room full of your colleagues, and everybody's giving up their opinion on what happened, and all the while, it's you they're after.
Right.
It's a wonderful scene.
Right.
Because that's exactly what happened. Hansen's supervisor at the time told me, when the block case broke, he said, we were sitting in a room trying to figure out what happened. There's just a handful of people. It was heavily compartmented. At CIA, only six people.
And he was one of the people in that room.
He was one of the people in that room, and he was giving out his version of what he thought happened.
Right.
Of course, he kept pointing his finger. It's got to be over at CIA. But
as
that scene from the movie showed, it must be a real rush because everybody's trying to figure it out. Think about it. When the block case blew up, State Department, Justice Department, Federal Bureau of Investigation, Central Intelligence Agency, just a handful of senior officials in there, all just know that just this whole case, we never lived to prove it or disprove it,
right.
It just blew up on us.
How did it turn towards him? I mean, he's pointing the fingers at you guys.
Yes, it was very, very fortunate. 60 Minutes did an excellent job on this part of it. There was a file that was purchased from a former, what 60 Minutes claimed was a former intelligence officer who had obviously stolen it before he left the KGB. It was sold to the United States officials for a significant sum of money, many millions of dollars.
Sure.
And in that were three pieces of evidence. One was for the file itself, part of the file. And if you read the letters, and I teach in my course what we call the content analysis of the Hansen letters, Hansen, of course, never met the Russians. He never he had two brief conversations with them. He didn't tell them his name. He didn't tell them where he worked. So that was the first major piece. The second one was a black plastic bag, which Hansen used to wrap up the packages that he had put his secrets on. He would put them under bridges, primarily in Fairfax County, Virginia. And the third thing was a cassette tape in which the spy was taped twice by the Russians making a phone call.
Okay.
Those three things got together.
They had his voice on there.
Yeah, and when they heard the voice, they were fully expecting it to be my voice. And when they found out it wasn't my voice, then they said, well, there was something in there. It was actually a quote from General Patton that they said, somebody says that a lot. Who is it? And that voice is familiar. These are all FBI agents, of course, listening to it. And the long process, actually, there was a long number of people got involved, but they eventually said, that's Bob Hansen.
Okay.
So that's what point then they found out they were after the wrong person.
Did it take for him to be arrested and convicted for you to get your life back with the agency? I mean, how quick did that happen?
Yeah, the CIA was very good about it. The CIA, of course, this is an FBI investigation. The CIA is not much they can do, and they were certainly hoping it wasn't me. But the package was that is very strong because I had knowledge of the block case and some other case that went bad.
Right.
There never was any evidence, as the general counsel at the FBI told my attorney. But the way the case was broken, there were some other pieces which I can't talk about, indicated that it just couldn't have. I couldn't have done what I claimed to have done. It was just impossible. Of course, I had, but the methodology used was such that there was a disbelief that methodology could have figured out some of the pieces that were involved in the Gichman case, the Soviet illegal. So that was, unfortunately for me and my family. My family suffered a great deal, obviously, from it. But CIA was very good. They apologized. They reinstated me. They asked me if I wanted to come back, and I did. And I served out the rest of my career at CIA.
That's
got my full clearances.
We're talking to Brian Kelly. He's a retired CIA officer, a retired Air Force officer as well. Spent over 40 years in counterintelligence. He's now an adjunct professor at the Institute of World Politics and also at the Bush School of Government at Texas A&M, teaching the business of counterintelligence and teaching future people who will be counterintelligence agents within the FBI, CIA, and other agencies how to do this work. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
I'd say most people know that they could save 15% or more on their car insurance by switching to GEICO. Helping people save money, it's what I do. And quite frankly, it's something that GEICO's been doing for over 70 years. But here's the really good part. GEICO is actually a shorthand term for Government Employees Insurance Company. So yeah, GEICO and the government employees, we go way back. Which is why if you're a federal employee, you could save even more money on top of GEICO's already low rates. And the news just gets better. GEICO's got an impressive 97% customer satisfaction rate. So you get some of the best service this side of the Potomac, and you get to save hundreds at the same time. Win-win, my friend. Oh, I've got to run, but I'll let my friend Mike fill you in on the rest. All yours, mate.
Thank you, my little green friend. Hey, it's Mike Causey. If you're a federal employee, then I've got some good news for you. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO or visit geico.com and see how much you could save.
This federal government update is brought to you by the U.S. General Services Administration.
Federal employees are required to report when they travel using first class or business class accommodations. The General Services Administration is now trying to make that reporting process a bit easier. The agency has posted instructions for reporting these accommodations at gsa.gov/PCTR. The change in reporting requirements went into effect last year after a GAO report showed that agencies were abusing their premium class travel privileges.
Wherever your mission takes you, FedRooms delivers the best government hotel rates available. FedRooms hotels are fire safe, FEMA certified, and continually audited to ensure rates are at or below per diem, so there are no unadvertised fees or hidden costs. To learn more, visit gsa.gov/FedRooms/options. That's gsa.gov/FedRooms/options. GSA, your everything source for lodging needs from FedRooms.
The latest from the Federal Security Spotlight brought to you by Cisco.
If you think continuous network monitoring is just installing tools, think again. Here's Marianne Swanson of NIST.
This continuous monitoring strategy shouldn't just be about the technical automated controls. If you go off and put all of your resources towards doing just the automation piece of it, and you're leaving out the management piece and the operational piece, the personnel, the physical security, we're going to be a little lopsided in our security.
To hear the entire show, log on to federalnewsradio.com. Will the top-of-mind security issues of today be the issues facing government tomorrow? Get the latest from federal experts on FISMA reform, the cyber initiative, how government is combating botnets, spyware, and other cyber evils, and more. Listen to Federal Security Spotlight, sponsored by Cisco, airing Thursday from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 AM or on demand at federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Security Spotlight is brought to you by Cisco, the leader in federal IT security. Half Price DC's 4th of July clearance sale has been extended. Gift certificates that were already half price are now up to 94% off face value. That's up to 94% off gift certificates to restaurants, spas, retail stores, and more. The Half Price DC 4th of July clearance sale has been extended through Sunday, and supplies are limited. So buy your gift certificates today. Clearance sale prices up to 94% off face value. Now through Sunday, only at halfpricedc.com.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We have with us Brian Kelly. He's a retired CIA officer, retired Air Force officer. He has spent over 40 years in the field of counterintelligence doing this work, basically a spy hunter, looking for people who are trying to spy on our country. He's also an adjunct professor at the Institute of World Politics, where he teaches about counterintelligence, and also he teaches it at the Bush School of Government at Texas A&M. Brian, over the break, we were kind of talking about, and I mentioned kind of as we were ending the last segment, you know, we may understand why somebody would spy for their country and go into another country and do that. That's kind of maybe patriotism and everything else. And that's the risk of the business, probably. But, you know, as we look at a situation like Ames, if we look at Hansen, and you knew these guys are working for the FBI. I mean, these guys have jobs that people would kill for.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that's the sad part.
And we deal with this all the time about people wanting to get into this business and who are true patriots.
Yes.
Why does somebody betray their government? You know, what are the reasons why a person would do this?
Well, the analysts and the psychologists that I work with delve into this issue quite a bit. They try to find common ground. What is it that's common to most of these people? There's no one right answer to it. You asked about Ames. Ames was in it almost strictly for the money. He was a mercenary. He had no real conscience about it. He was just someone who, once he got into it, just kind of compartmented things off and just kept putting packages into the hands of the Russians and receiving millions. He got over $2 million. Hansen.
Did he realize what he was doing? I mean, do you think that? Do you think he realized?
It depends. In my classes, I show a number of videos from him in jail trying to explain He's trying to rationalize what he did, and not many of them make sense. The only time you ever see emotions with Ames, and I've got him on three different clips. Ted Koppel does the best one, and Wolf Blitzer does one. There was a British journalist who did one, and they all touched on one thing that hit Ames, and that was, what are you going to tell your son, who was 5 years old? His son Paul was 5 years old when his father was arrested. When he grows up, what are you going to tell your father, or tell him that your father did? And Ames, and especially one with Koppel, there was about a 30-second piece there where the camera zoomed in on Ames. His mouth moved, no words came out. And he knew this question was going to be asked. It had been asked before by others. And Ames, the body language, he would touch his face. He would move his hands, and his mouth would try to open. Nothing would come out. So did he realize what he was doing? Questionable at the time, but sitting behind in solitary confinement and later on in a maximum security prison up in Pennsylvania, he can't even begin to talk about how he's going to tell his son and explain to his son the answer to the questions you've asked. Why did you do this? Sure. Was it worth it? Of course it's not worth it. He talks about that. Hansen's a far more complex thing. I just got finished today instructing another group of military people, and we went into this exact part of the Hansen story. One of the things I did was to color code what I call the content analysis of the Hansen letters. And that's taking the letters from the affidavit, the unclassified affidavit, and we study them for clues. And Hansen leaves numerous clues to who he is. And what I'm teaching the investigators is sometimes themes. And I said, when you look at a theme that seems to be common, color code it on your screen. And then when you go through it fast, you'll see a certain color pop up more than other. And what does that color mean? The color green that what I had today was indicator of money or some kind of financial part of it. And you see little green in the beginning of Hansen's second period of espionage, a lot of green at the end. So to my way of thinking, that gives us a hint that where Hansen, a lot of people, and myself included, think he was in there for the thrill of the game. He gave up enormous secrets. He could have got an enormous amount of money. Was he that stupid that he realized by selling the name of a general officer inside of the Russian services that we were running could have netted him $1 million? Did he give it up for $10,000? He certainly knew the value. He knew what Ames had given up, and yet he was willing to give up precious secrets to this government, include the continuity of government program. It doesn't come any bigger than that. Sure. The billions of dollars that it took us to reconstruct that. He got $50,000 for that. Nuclear secrets, $25,000, $35,000, $15,000. You go up these numbers and you think, what was he thinking? It certainly wasn't exclusively for the money. But Hansen
a game to them?
Well, yeah, to some degree, I think, Derek, that you could one could come to that conclusion. And I believe it was either the Webster Commission report or the Inspector General's report after two extraordinarily good, especially the Inspector General's report after Hansen, the stuff that my students study to look at the lessons learned. Hansen admitted an addiction to espionage. Mm. In other words, watching what happened when he saw the block case go down, sitting in that room, watching every place implode, Department of Justice, State.
He's getting a high from it.
He's getting a high, absolutely. I don't think there's any question. Now, there are people that may not agree with that, but many of us do believe that's what it is. Anna Montez over at DIA is one of the first few ideologues. She did it for ideology reasons, took almost no money. There's no one common thread. But your question earlier pointed right in the middle of it. How many of your listeners, how many of the people that come to you for guidance and direction would give anything to become an FBI special agent, a CIA case officer, right, a DIA analyst, a right, State Department officer? And these people have it, and they were rewarded. Every one of these people have gotten to a relatively high grade, and yet they were willing to toss it over to be a traitor. And there's no explanation for that.
And the monetary amounts, I mean, whether you get a couple millions, I mean, but you have, you know, and we talked about this over the break about you've destroyed your family's name. You know, the
yes,
damage,
Hansen,
the repercussions continue to go for
the legacy
children.
Of the Hansen, the name. I mean, how can you escape it? And was he ever thinking about that? I think, No, he didn't think about that. How could he and continue to do that? So there's a lot of mysteries out there. There's no one answer, although in the case of Ames, he certainly, it was for money. It was strictly for money.
Let me segue into this because we only got a few minutes. How does a person, you know, become a kind of the spy catcher? How do you get into the field of counterintelligence? I mean, you know, a lot of people want to get into this business. What is the route? I mean, I know there's not one path.
Correct.
What's some of the paths?
Well, I got very lucky. I was a commission officer in the Air Force, graduating from ROTC, St. Michael's College, when I got through. And divine providence, I guess, steered me into something called the Office of Special Investigations. Didn't know really what it was. I got in there through sheer luck. Spent the first 6 months of my career. I was a special agent. I was in civilian clothes, even though I was a second lieutenant, had a badge and credentials. We were, as OSI, we were founded by a former FBI agent. So we were very similar in many respects to the FBI. And after a few months of running background investigations, how we got started, I was 21 years of age, pushing doorbells and asking people about, you know, somebody was looking for a position of trust. I saw CI as the place I wanted to be, and I started in on the ground floor. I did the, we call the scut work, the basic things that one does, and worked my way up through the system. It's the only thing. I've done criminal work. I've done a lot of other things, but it's the only thing that really felt right to me. This is where I felt at home. This is what I wanted to do. And the more I got into it, the more interesting it was. The people I worked with, both in the Air Force and especially later on at CIA, very, very intelligent, very dedicated people. And it's a joy and a pleasure to work with people who are as dedicated as that. So my I guess the advice I would give to those of you who wanted to get in is to get your foot in the door at any of the investigative agencies. And then you can always, once you get your clearance, once you've established a track record, then you apply. We've taken a lot of people at CIA. The FBI has taken people in. Department of Defense has taken people in. And you can slide sideways into another organization. You just need to have your track record. I just, again, got finished telling the students I just left. I said, take it seriously. If you want to be a CI person, it's going to mean you're going to have to work harder than most. You not only have to understand the intelligence business, but you also have to understand the adversary.
Brian Kelly, he's a retired CIA officer, also retired from the Air Force. He's been in the business of counterintelligence for over 40 years. He's also an adjunct professor at the Institute of World Politics and an adjunct professor at the Bush School of Government at Texas A&M, where he's teaching the business of counterintelligence. Just want to thank you for being on Fed Access.
My pleasure, Derek. Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch, Friday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED. Your source for federal news now.
What is the U.S. Postal Service's sustainability strategy? How does going green and employing formal sustainability programs make good business sense? How does the U.S. Postal Service help customers make eco-friendly choices? And what's the future of sustainability programs within the Postal Service? Listen next week as these questions and more will be explored with Sam Pulcrano, Vice President of Sustainability at the U.S. Postal Service. Join host Michael Keegan next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Here's Robert Lentz, former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense, Cyber Identity and Information Assurance, on the Cyber Warfare Prevention Securing Your Software and Applications panel, sponsored by Fortify Software.
75% of the breaches are occurring at the application level. So a lot of our network defense capabilities aren't doing the job. We've long recognized the application layer has been a major source of vulnerability. Well, we really have tried to deal with it in a way that has left this area open for the kind of attacks that we're seeing every single day.
To listen to the program made possible by Fortify Software in its entirety, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Your mission-critical IT system just got hacked. Confidential data stolen. Could this have been prevented? Fortify Software Security Assurance Solutions are helping government organizations secure the software they depend on to run their agency's most mission-critical operations. Find the vulnerabilities inside your software. Fix them quickly and cost-effectively. Fortify your applications with security. Visit Fortify.com. That's Fortify.com.
Are you tired of hiding your varicose and spider veins? Tired of the fear and frustration that someone will actually see your legs? Then it's time to say goodbye to those ugly veins for good. Because for the next 24 hours, you can try Vinacura free. All-natural Vinacura is specially formulated with a clinically proven ingredient that dramatically reduces the appearance of varicose and spider veins. It comes from Europe and is finally available in the United States. To get your free trial, just call 1-800-300-2550 in the next 24 hours.